Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Scott Pianowski, and it is Monday, June 8th, and baseball's still in limbo, but we're going to have a podcast today, and hopefully more concrete stuff to talk about in the future. Before I bring on today's guest, Dalton Dundon, I just want to make a brief statement about, obviously, there's a lot going on in the world right now with health situations, and there's a lot of social stuff going on with protests and reactions to some really awful things that have happened in America in the last few weeks. And I think everybody knows what I'm referring to. Without getting too deep into that, I just want people to know this podcast has been around for, this is our second season. And last year, it was our first year. We actually won an FSWA award for this podcast, which I'm very proud of. And I think it speaks to how high the quality was of the people we had on as guests. And my goal on this podcast is to have a good conversation. A lot of times it means I just get out of the way and I listen to the people who come on this program. But I think we can always strive to do better. And with that in mind, given the current climate of what's going on in America, I think this podcast needs to have more diversity and more newness to a lot of the guests. And I'm going to really make a personal effort to try to get you some of the voices maybe you haven't heard, and some of people from different backgrounds that haven't been served on this podcast so far. And I just think that's something we all should try to do in our own way, in whatever sphere of influence we have. And so I'm just going to promise to you that I'm going to try to be more diverse and more widespread with the people we get on the show. And hopefully we'll introduce you to some new voices. And I'm looking forward to talking to some new people too. So with all due respect to everybody we've had on this podcast before and the people who are multiple guests, I mean, look, Dalton Dundon's on today. He's great. Anytime you talk to him, I'll talk to Fred Zinke or Andy Behrens or Paul Spohr anytime. But I think we need to also have some new voices on this show too. And I'm going to work on that in the weeks to come. So more on that in future episodes. And if there's anybody that you think we should have as a guest that we haven't, I'm always open. Scott_Pianowski, hit me up on Twitter. We can have a dialogue with that. Okay, well, so let's get to today's show. Dalton Dundon, you know, he's been my colleague at Yahoo for many years. He's a man of many talents. And today we're going to talk about fantasy baseball for as long as we can do that. And then we're going to draft sports equipment. We're going to bring our drafts back this week, and we're going to draft our favorite pieces of sports equipment. So that will be a gas at the end. Dalton Dundon, aloha.
Hey, well said, P&L. Weird time, yeah, in the world in general, obviously, as you said. And to talk baseball, too, because maybe news is going to break almost invariably as soon as we stop recording. But, man, I'd love to watch some sports and have a diversion. But baseball, where does your confidence level stand, man?
You know, it's funny. I actually set a golf lineup today for a fantasy golf league that I'm in. And it was just so exciting just to have something to look at and something to care about. Because I haven't been paying that much attention to the soccer. I'm not an auto racing fan. I do like European soccer, actually, but I haven't really been watching that much. But I think there's going to be a season. I think there's too much money at stake. And I also think that baseball, I think eventually the power brokers here are going to realize that the damage of a missed season. And look, I mean, fans eventually come back. I mean, people thought the strike of 1994 maybe could have been a kill shot for baseball. And there's been other years where there's been looming work stoppages at play. With the year after 9/11, I think baseball was thinking of maybe having a strike in September of that year, but cooler heads prevailed and they ended up not having a work stoppage. I think there's too much money at stake. And I also think that people are going to realize, look, this is just a time where, obviously the owners are in a really strong position because you can own something theoretically for the rest of your life, where a baseball player only has a window where he can earn his money. But I think eventually the people who make the decisions, the people who have the power, the people who hold the cards in this standoff, I think eventually going to say, look, we need to have a season because it's just something the game needs for its health and just to be in the goodwill of the country right now. So that's not based on any inside information. And I haven't really been grinding the talk that much because I think sometimes it's just really depressing to look at, you know, and I want to think positively, but I do feel right now. I think it's probably 80-20 that we have a season of some sort. And that's just my gut feel.
I hear you about the golf. I know you're not a MMA guy, but there was a good UFC card this weekend. But I'm ready for one of these three major sports. And let me tell you, football and basketball come back. I mean, it's like basketball. I mean, they're going way out of their way to complete a season. You know, it's a bad look if baseball can't get this together. That's a sport that, you know, is half broken already. So maybe this will force them to address some issues that, you know, that needed to anyway. But man, I hope they come to an agreement and hope it's fast. And I know you've said this backstage as well, but I'd take 50 games now. I don't care. I mean, yes, it seems crazy, small sample. And if you're going to, you know, spend money in fantasy, it's not ideal. But I'd take 50 games over nothing for sure. So I hope you're right. And I hope that we do have a season. And then when we get to that, it's just going to be craziness. The difference without fans and the injuries. I know people have been talking about a short training camp in the NFL. Well, what about baseball? I mean, all kinds of crazy different variables and wild cards. We're have to look. I hope we have to look forward to those decisions, though, man. I hope they do play.
And, you know, I know a lot of people will say, well, hey, why even have a 50-game season? It's just going to be so random. I mean, you know, people have trotted out commonly that Washington was 19-31 last year after 50 games. They would have been nowhere near a playoffs. Even expanded playoffs wouldn't have had the Nationals. But then again, remember, keep in mind, as much as people can play that card, they didn't win their division. And the reason why Washington was able to win the World Series is we have expanded playoffs and they got hot in the baseball tournament. I don't believe the World Series winner doesn't necessarily reflect who the best team in baseball was. I mean, what, the Marlins won the World Series twice and they've never won the National League East. They've never won a division in their history, but they won two world championships because they got hot at the right time. I mean, you know, Eli Manning's probably going to be an NFL Hall of Famer and because he got hot in two playoffs. They had a minus point differential the year they won that second ring in 2011. So, you know, will it be a perfect season? Will it be as legitimate as a 162-game season or even like, you know, the 114 games that the players wanted to push forward not that long ago? That's probably out the window now. Obviously, it's not as legitimate as that. And baseball's changed a lot. It used to be just, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, you won the American League or National League, you went right to the World Series. There weren't even playoffs. And then they went to divisions, then went to three divisions, wild cards, all that.
Giants won 103 games and didn't make the playoffs.
Right. The last great pennant race. Was that 1993, I think, the first year of Barry Bonds?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, where the Braves traded for McGriff in the middle of the season. What, the press box caught on fire that day, and then the Braves pretty much caught on fire that same night. To me, playoffs are tournaments. You know, the best team doesn't win March Madness. You know, the best golfer may not win the U.S. Open. The best baseball team doesn't always win the World Series. And yes, there'll be more randomness and more variance in a short season. But I mean, I think we have to accept that randomness and variance are already a big part of what we do in sports.
And DFS is blowing up, and that's a one-day sample. So, I mean, come on. And I will point out this. You're going to get the best of these teams. Well, I'll counter that in a second. But theoretically, you're going to get the best of these teams, like the quick hook. You know, you're not going to get the giveaway games. You know, the team, every game is more important. It's magnified. So the manager is going to make all the decisions almost like it is a glorified playoff series. Now, having said that, teams that fall out of the race, say 30 games, if you're already out of it with health being such an issue, I could see it getting, I don't know, dicey, the teams that are out of it with health becoming an issue. But theoretically, this could just be one gigantic, big type of postseason atmosphere, right? I mean, that'd be awesome.
I mean, I've already felt that the NHL, the NBA, and the Major League Baseball regular seasons are too long as is. Right. This is a gross overcorrection because nobody's calling for 50 games or 60 games as an ideal season. But I think in a perfect world, maybe baseball could play 140, 145, 150 games. I think a lot of reasons why they've resisted that is because the history of the game and the stats of the game. Baseball has that advantage over every other sport. Nobody, you know, there's no amount of points Steph Curry could score where people would really get excited about it. I mean, I guess if he scored 101 in a game or something like that. But I mean, if they went to a 70-game NBA season, people wouldn't say, oh, no, now all the records are screwed up. Totally. Nobody cares anymore. Or if hockey trimmed 10 games off its season. And we've seen in recent years, you know, the last couple of decades, for labor reasons, we've seen like a two-thirds hockey season, a two-thirds basketball season. I thought those were actually very exciting seasons. I know that's not an apples-to-apples comparison to what baseball might get, but I think people need to be a little bit more open-minded at how much fun this might be if we actually get this truncated season.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that it could highlight the best parts. And you know, the whole bubble issue, that was going to create us – without the home parks. And it sounds like they are. Let me just ask you that. Do you think if it does happen, it looks like they're going to attempt to each do it in their own home parks, right? And that, to me, is better. I like that angle of fantasy baseball, figuring out the differences, because I think it's generally a little bit underrated. So I like that aspect and that angle, and I do hope that is the plan if it does go forward.
Yeah, when they were throwing out ideas of having centralized locations, you know, something similar in general to what the NBA is going to do, I put that in the back of my mind. I said, you know, if they get really close to that being a reality, I'll start grinding it and start trying to figure out what the nuances of it are and the differences. But it sounds like that probably won't even come to that point now. And I mean, I'm glad, because for one, that means that we're closer to normalcy. And I hope, I mean, look, I shouldn't have to say this. I mean, I hope they can find a way to make it safe. I hope they can find a way to give the players peace of mind and some normalcy of their lives. I mean, I don't think it's fair to ask the players to be without their families, you know, not see their kids for 3 months or something like that. I don't think anybody's calling for that, but I get the idea that we may be able to make this safe enough with no fans, with social distancing, with different routines in the locker room, with extended taxi squads, all those things. It seems like that might be feasible. And look, as I always say, I think every week, I'm not a doctor or a scientist, and I'm going to defer to them. I'm not trying to pretend I have all the answers to that. But I'm cautiously optimistic we're going to have something here. That's my bottom line takeaway.
Same here. I wish I could contribute more from the actual X's and O's. But frankly, I've just been, you know, paying attention to football, and wake me up when they come to an agreement. It's just I've just really been trying to willfully ignore the details, because I know it's just such a mess.
And I also see that a lot of the negotiations, a lot of negotiations sometimes are just going to be one side puts out its first offer meant to be refused. It's just a starting point of negotiations. And the other side says, okay, here's our offer that we know you're going to say no to too. And then you creep towards things in the middle. So hopefully they sense that there's not a ton of time here to get something done. I mean, they're going to need amp up time. They're going to need summer training. I guess it's essentially going to be. So hopefully maybe this week will be the tipping point where something gets done. And I think people will feel pretty good if that is the case. Now, Dalton, on Friday, we joined our friend Vlad Sedler. Shout out to him, friend of the podcast, fantasy guru. Had us on his live stream. We were talking. It's funny. It was supposed to be a baseball live stream for an hour, but we talked a lot of football on that show. But before we shifted to football, we talked about how strategy might change. Now, if they do come up with agreement this year, this week, they play a season, you know, a lot of leagues haven't drafted yet. I'm going to have some of my leagues are going to redraft. And you and I were kind of playing along with how our strategies might differ, or what the player pool analysis might be in a truncated season. I was thinking maybe leaning into hitting, and you were thinking maybe leaning into pitching. I know maybe we need to see the broader strokes before the finer points, I mean, before we actually dig in on this. But just talk about what we talked about Friday, where – okay, short season, you know, how does that change draft strategy?
Okay, first of all, last year I experimented and went extreme and went crazy hitter heavy in the main event. NFBC actually didn't take a starting pitcher to the 15th round, I believe. Experiment was okay, it wasn't that great. I've kind of typically been a starting pitcher guy, and I've leaned more toward that way to begin with. I want to come away with one of the horses in the first round. Now, having said this is totally crazy, but I'll point you to who knows what's going to happen this short season in many areas. But Phil Dussault had this Twitter thread that convinced me that, you know, it's very smart. I will not explain it well. Essentially, he compared the difference of R squared between full season and half season stats, and pitching stats were a little bit stickier. The Ks are the most stable of all the stats. So smarter guys than me coming up with that data, just kind of my theory in general. So I'm probably going to go pitcher heavy if and when we do restart these drafts. And maybe there's more of an overall component in my head, you know, because those are the guys with the upside, the guys that can get all the Ks, and they're definitely riskier. So maybe your mileage may vary in your home league. But in general, I think I am going to go just a little extreme with the starting pitchers. And I get that's contrarian.
You know, it's interesting. We had Sammy Reed on the podcast last year, and shout out to Sammy. I think it was the Sammy Reed episode that we nominated towards the FSWA. And I joked to Sammy that when we won the FSWA award, I thought part of that belonged to him, because, you know, he spoke for the majority of that pod. But he had a really great Twitter thread a couple of years ago where he compared starting pitching in fantasy baseball to running backs in fantasy football. And the idea that because the value and I'm not going to make the point as well as he did in the thread, and hopefully I can link to that or point you to it, because I think he just articulated the point better than I'm going to right now. But I feel like the pot odds that you click on, if you nail the running back, if you take, say whatever you want about the risk of a running back early in a fantasy football draft, they touch the ball a lot, they get hit a lot, they have injury risk. But if you get one of those bell cows and they produce the way they can, if you hit the high end of their range, I think that increases your winning percentage more than any other position you could. Having the right answers at running back is gigantically important. And I feel that way with the pitchers. Yes, they get hurt more often than position players. And, you know, a lot of times when a pitcher gets hurt, it's something like Tommy John surgery. They're out for the whole season.
Yeah.
Or maybe they pitch lousy for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks with a bad elbow. And then you find out, you know, there's something wrong with them. And so they wreck your team for a while, and then you can't even use them anymore. But I feel like the slugging percentage that you gain when you hit on a pitcher, if this were a normal season, I was certainly going to want to at least have one or two pitchers on my team that I could say, yeah, I could see this guy being a top five arm. Because again, I think that link between the fantasy running back and the fantasy baseball starting pitcher, I think there's a good correlation there.
Yeah, and starters contribute more theoretically, because typically your fantasy roster is only starting about 7 starting pitchers, 2 relief pitchers, and you're starting 13 hitters. You said it perfectly, though, the great correlation with fantasy running backs. And to give you an idea where I stand there, I did a draft over the weekend, an NFFC draft, and I took 5 running backs in the first 6 rounds. And wow, you can only start 3. I didn't take another one, actually, the rest of the draft, but that's typically what I'm going to do, is just go nuts in the early round on that volatile, most important position. And I might do something crazy like 4 or 5 starting pitchers in the first 5 or 6 rounds in my fantasy baseball draft with the same theory.
And I think that probably spoke also to, you might see the receiver board is particularly deep, and then, okay, I can play catch up here and still get a pretty good group of receivers.
Exactly. That's receivers so deep, and obviously quarterback and tight end, in my opinion, is deeper than ever too. And if you're not going to start a super flex or 2 tight ends, then I'm just going to do what you tell me to. And I didn't draft a quarterback in that league until the 14th round, and I came away with 3 on my personal top 15. So for football, I love that strategy. Baseball, it's not as easy as that, because there's so many more positions. But the comparison with running back and starting pitcher, I really like it. And that's why I would just absolutely load up on starting pitchers, because no matter how good of a drafter you are, you just have to figure you're going to miss on one of those. So that's just what I've been attacking through depth.
Yeah, quarterback, of course, super deep. I did a video for Yahoo today on Daniel Jones. His NFFC ADP at quarterback is 13. On Yahoo, he's quarterback 26. Now there isn't a huge amount of real estate in those differences, even though it's 13 position slots. But that just goes to show you, if you're in an NFFC draft, you know, Daniel Jones is flying off the board pretty optimistically. And in Yahoo, you can kind of sit on your hands, maybe even forget that you have to draft a quarterback, and still end up with Daniel Jones, who I think he was a pretty good play. To swing it back to baseball, I was saying all spring, I thought you could do well this year at any price point at shortstop, whether you want to attack that position early, middle rounds, late rounds, or just even like, you know, just final 3 or 4 rounds. I think every team just about has the shortstop I'm excited about. I see like 25 of these guys who I want to draft. And sometimes when I've drafted shortstops, I've ended up taking a second one for my middle, maybe even a third one who qualified at shortstop, who could be one of my utility guys. So if you did focus on other positions, you know, if we talk about maybe receiver or quarterback in fantasy football being very deep, I think the outfield is generally deep in fantasy baseball, but this year, more than ever, I've never seen a shortstop pool as deep as this one.
You're so right. And the reason I also like this strategy is because, say, wide receiver, I think the middle tier is just gigantic, and everyone's opinion may differ. And I'm with you on these shortstops. The Paul DeJong, Gavin Lux is like one of the best prospects in a while, and I have 20 shortstops ranked ahead of him. Rosario is another nice upside on the Mets. Everyone's afraid of Carlos Correa is like not even a top 15 shortstop now because of the injuries. So I'm with you. These depths, how you take advantage of that is, well, A, by playing an auction. And if you don't, in a draft, it's by letting the rest of the room separate these guys that the margins are so close together, and then getting them, you know, 3 or 4 rounds later.
And you made a really great point. When the position is deep, you could also take comfort in the fact that your list is probably different than somebody else's, and, you know, a player that you like a lot, when there's so many options, that's the great thing. Like in a fantasy auction, it's so important to buy when there are alternatives for your opponent, so they don't have to go to the mat for a player, because this is the last, you know, he's the last good at player at a certain position. But there's always going to be alternatives for shortstop, and the other guy probably just has a different list than you do. So if you wait, there's going to be a good chance that you can find somebody that you think the market is underpricing, just because they can't everybody can't get pushed off the board. There's just too many options. And so I think that sets up well for how you can do value-wise. You mentioned Lux. He's a player who I feel like I've had to change my opinion on a little bit. I was just going to avoid him in the spring because I thought, okay, he's batting eighth. He may not play every day. Pitcher's probably going to slot behind him. That's such a kill shot in the National League. But all along, the talk has been it's going to be a universal DH this year. I assume that's what they're going to go through, at least for 2020. So now you don't have that dead spot behind Lux. It also, some of his competition for some of the playing time at second base, maybe they play somewhere else. Maybe they slide into some of the DH spots now and then. I think when people say, okay, universal DH, how does that affect it? I think a lot of people will first look at, okay, who's getting at bats that wasn't getting them at all? And I see that argument. But to me, the universal DH for a National League team, I think maybe the more important thing is who's a part-time player who becomes almost certainly a full-time player now because this DH exists. I look at somebody like Ryan Braun, who maybe in a full season was like a 400 at bat guy. Now he could be, again, he won't get 400 at bats this season, but he was somebody maybe would play 2/3 of the time, 60% of the time, something like that. Now with the universal DH, where the Brewers can protect him and keep him out of the field a decent chunk of the time, maybe he plays 90% of the time.
Pino, I can't wait. I hope I have to go over and research, you know, who benefits the most in the NL tomorrow. I hope I have to do that with Baseball Announced. But I like the rule, and I think it's probably going to be continual, and they're just going to keep the universal DH if they do go with it, if the season gets played. But from what I will say, from what I've read, the early math is shown to me that don't overrate how much it's going to hurt the NL pitchers. I don't think that'll kill them too much. Obviously, it brings Gerrit Cole a little bit more to the pack. But you brought up a great point. It's the subtle things. It's not just the playing time. Ryan Braun is a great example. But it's what about the lineup turnover? Gavin Lux is no longer hitting eighth in front of a pitcher. That is a big difference. I mean, batting ninth in the NL, all that stuff. Batting first in the NL, suddenly you're not right behind a pitcher, too. So that stuff is all going to be stuff we have to factor into, too. So it's just funny, the short season, and then, oh, by the way, also universal DH thrown at us as well.
I even wonder if that could – I forget if it was you or Vlad or maybe somebody else we had on the podcast was talking about Mookie Betts. Presumably the leadoff hitter for the Dodgers, that helps him too, right? I mean, now he doesn't have this guy bunting. I mean, the thing with the pitchers, it's not just that they can't hit, but so many times if there's a man on base, they're just giving up the out. They're not even trying to get a hit. And it means that those innings, you know, you're basically playing with two outs. It totally changes the complexion. And also with a guy like Lux, you know, now those players can run. It used to be anytime I had somebody who I liked in the National League who could run, if they were going to hit sixth, seventh, or eighth, I'm like, well, throw that out the window because they have that dead spot. Again, it's not just Lux, who I think is a good example here, or Braun. I think it could even maybe a leadoff hitter in the National League, maybe Mookie Betts over a full season could maybe get 10 or 15 more RBIs.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, that's definitely another factor that's good. I mean, it helps fantasy baseball. Now, you mentioned that maybe that hurts the NL, but in general, should be more runs scored, more strategy. So, yeah, no, I think it'll be. Yeah, and also guys that are banged up, you know, maybe they won't be in the lineup, obviously, if you have to start more. So and more like a half rest day for NL players that never had that option before. So I'm in for that part.
Let me ask you this. I'm just spitballing here. Would you be more inclined to want to have a young team based on if the season has to get amped up pretty quickly and we're not sure who's more physically ready to go? And that's going to be, it's going to come down to, you know, who's got a home gym, who's been really taking it seriously, who's been expecting to play, who maybe coming off an injury or something like that. But is there any case for, okay, I don't want to draft 35-year-old guys this year or 33-year-old guys this year. Yeah, I'm just going to skew younger because maybe they could hit the ground running, or maybe I want a proven player. You know, maybe it makes you less likely to take a rookie, or you're more likely to take a rookie thinking the teams are just going to put their best talent on the field and none of this manipulation with service time. We only have 50 games to make the playoffs. Is there anything about to what I've just said in the last 30 seconds do you think is actionable for a draft that we may do in the next few weeks.
First off, I forgot. I want to point out that Madison Bumgarner is furious over this. I bet half the reason he signed in Arizona, he wanted to make sure to stay in the NL, and he can't bat anymore. He's fired up over that. But
right.
Yeah. So what was age? You know me. I'm crazy. I go young guys, especially in fantasy football. I draft the rookies high. Baseball, I hadn't thought about that. It's an excellent point. I just think it's a variable that we don't know, like who's working out, who's staying in shape. It's just so tough to know. I think it's just a gamble regardless of age. Yeah, maybe the Joe Adells in LA will be more likely to play right away. That's a great point. I do think that is something that hopefully that information will come out. From what I've seen, it seems like rookies, you should be more aggressive. They will play right away. But as for like in shape or health, it's an interesting point. I don't know. I haven't thought of the age. My guess is it's a total wild card and completely comes down to the person. And we're just going to be guessing.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, if they made a agreement this week, if they came to both sides said, okay, here's our season, 50 games, 54 games, 62 games, whatever it is. The first thing I would do is look at the leagues that I put on hold that I run. And I would try to draft as close to the regular season. Normally I'm like, hey, let's draft early. Let's reward the guy who's keeping up with it. But now I think it just, I want as much information as possible. And I think I would want that for everybody in my league. So if they said, I don't know, July 15th, they're going to play, which I don't even know if that's how feasible that would be. Let's just say July 15th. I would try to have my league draft as late as possible to that July 15th. And so we could all kind of go back. We'd all be in spring training. You know, we'd all be in that information gathering mode. And hopefully, you know, with the season, I hope that we can have more concrete discussions on this podcast about exactly what to do with player pools and what to do with news that we'll be generating that's really dead right now. But I'm usually, look, let's draft all season. Let's draft in January, February, March. Some leagues have to be closer to the regular season because of just timing and just there's only so much room on the calendar. But this is one year where I actually want to draft as late as possible if we actually get a reboot.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And the aforementioned Sammy Reed, I'm actually in a league with him. And we got together in person in San Francisco and did our draft. Imagine that, in person. And the talk is they want to most people, I believe, want to redo it all. Just do it. It's so much has changed. We're going to do it online and just completely scrap the fact that that ever happened. So I could see that too. I'm not fighting it. You know, I mean, it makes sense. So much has changed. It's a different world we lived in, you know, 3 months ago.
Yeah, one of my keeper leagues, we still haven't come to an agreement on this yet, but what I think we're going to do is we're going to put the keeper league on hold for a year. But if there's a baseball season, we're just going to play a start from scratch league. So we still have skin in the game, and you know, we're still playing and engaging. And you know, fantasy sports are such a great social network, a great way to stay in touch. I mean, this particular league dates back to the early 90s. These are my oldest and dearest friends. But we're talking about maybe just having a one season redraft, and then all the keeper stuff we just put on ice until 2021.
That makes sense. Yeah, totally. Yeah, we're all going to have to, nothing's going to be perfect. There's no perfect solution here. Let's just see some baseball. At this point, I'll take anything.
Let me ask you one more fantasy baseball question, and then we'll transition into our sports equipment draft. One of the things we were talking about a lot in the springtime, and again, this is like most of this podcast, I don't know if there's any concrete answer to this, but I'm just going to throw it out to you. It feels like 3 years ago, but at the beginning of 2020 in the baseball world, it was the Astros, the cheating scandal. Carlos Beltran, you know, was the manager for the Mets for like 10 minutes, and then he lost his job. Alex Cora lost his job in Boston. Obviously, a bunch of people lost their job in Houston, including the manager and the general manager. And the players, you know, some people didn't like their reaction. Maybe some of their initial statements were kind of tone deaf. The idea was going to be that Houston would be the bad guy in baseball this year, to go on the road, that'd get booed by everybody. Well, you know, going on the road may be totally different now because there may not be any fans. I don't know. Is the other team going to boo them? You know, is the umpire going to boo them? I mean, just to be the sound of silence. Have you thought about, I know this may sound kind of awkward to even say this, but I mean, is a strange season without fans, does that make the Houston Astros a winner and all that?
It does. Absolutely. It benefits them for sure. I personally wasn't letting it bother me at draft tables too much. In fact, I found Astros slipping and I was grabbing them. I didn't see this coming. Yeah, the big concern was the crowd, and that's gone. And frankly, Some players are going to be upset, but there are bigger things in the world to worry about. So from so many levels, I just feel like that Astros thing, maybe I'm wrong and they'll get beaned like crazy. But my guess is my original instinct is, yeah, this situation helps the villains suddenly are forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact that the outcry filtered into the players. A lot of non-Houston players were really upset about this. And we saw, generally speaking, I don't think there's a lot of animosity between different baseball players. I mean, some sports are known for just some of the stuff that goes on off the field or off the court. I mean, look at the NBA. It just feels like there's a lot of slights and perceived slights and guys. You know, certainly the NBA in a lot of ways is a very chummy league, but there's also clearly some camps that don't get along with each other. And I've never really felt like baseball, I always felt like baseball just had a different flow to it. Obviously, there's a lot more players in baseball and stuff like that. But I saw a tenseness to the non-Houston reaction to this that was actually surprising to me and maybe even a little bit refreshing to me. I mean, I always felt like one of the frustrating things to me about the steroid era as it went on is that the innocent players didn't jump up and down sooner and say, look, the Players Association should represent me. I'm the guy who's not cheating. You know, I mean, we shouldn't protect the players who are using enhancements. We should make it so that somebody can stay in the game without having to do this to keep up. I thought the player reaction outside of Houston was very interesting. And again, whether it's extra chin music or some of that stuff got policed on the field, I don't know if the tone of that has come down because there's just so many more important things going on in the world right now that maybe people are going to give the Astros a pass. Or if maybe, I don't know, maybe Trevor Power gets the Astros on the schedule and, you know, he wants to hit three guys in the first inning. I really don't know. I'm not even sure there's a question here, but I just wonder if just the time has allowed that to diffuse a little bit.
No, you absolutely could be right about that. And the player's reaction was different. It was palpable. And part of it, I think, was the Astros' response to it. You know, it was just kind of arrogant. There was no even fake contriteness, really. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe I am underrating that. And the players, maybe they have not forgotten. Just because I have doesn't mean the players that were directly affected have.
Okay, well, that's going to put the wrap on our fantasy baseball talk for this episode. But I promise you, hopefully this week is going to be a positive week for the negotiations. I hope there's going to be some kind of a season that they can come. I still think there's just too much in the middle of the pot, and I understand the future of the sport is in a tenuous place right now. So I'm choosing to be optimistic about this. And I promise you, as there's more news to grind, as there's more player pools to deal with and fantasy strategy to talk about that is more concrete, that we will do so on this podcast. And again, I'm going to try to get some different voices in these chairs as well. So just look forward to that. Let's pivot to our draft. We need levity and silliness in this podcast, and we're going to have some today. We're going to draft sports equipment. That's all I said to Dalton. I said we're drafting sports equipment. There's no other rules. We're going to go five rounds. And Dalton, you're in the sporting goods store. You have the first pick.
All right, I'm sure I'm going to blow this. I did not get a lot of thought to this, so I'm going to miss some easy ones, obvious ones.
That's good.
Ones,
less thought is better for these things.
All right, the number one pick, I'm in a sporting goods store right now. I thought about this. This may seem weird, but I believe you do play this sport. So give me golf clubs. In today's world, you want an outdoor sport. I mean, also, I'm old, and I don't want to be doing anything physical activity. So, yeah, with the way the world is today, give me a set of golf clubs.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I had that takes something off my board. I had wedges on my list, but really any kind of golf golf club equipment. You know, some people can go into a golf store and want to look at different drivers. Recent years, I've redone my clubs, and I have a bunch of hybrids now that I hit. I have four different wedges, which okay. You could argue at my talent level is probably one or two more than I need. But that's a great pick. It was going to be one of my early priorities. My first round pick is going to be, and this is very loosely tied into equipment, but it's what you would buy in a sporting goods store. I'm going with the hat. Whether it's a baseball hat, a hat that represents a different sport. A hat is a fashion symbol. It's you're right now wearing your hat backwards. You know, which I think you were so influential doing that King Griffey Jr. started doing it when he was in baseball. You know, because he saw how much of a trendsetter you were, but. Yeah, I wear a hat a lot. I like the way it blocks out the peripheral vision. I like the way certainly it protects me from the sun. And, a hat's a fashion statement. You know, some people wear them frontwards. Some people wear them backwards. Francisco Rodney tilted it to the side. And, I think in all sports, in baseball, it's actually part of your equipment. In other sports, it's something you wear when you're not competing. But I have a lot of affection for the sporting hat.
I do like the hat. I'm wearing it mostly now because I need a haircut during my quarantine.
Oh, God, do I need a haircut.
But
Three weeks for me. I'm glad I got a haircut right before the world shut down because I look kind of ridiculous now anyway. But, man, I would look like a Muppet in about two or three more weeks. It seems like in the middle of June, you can get a haircut in Michigan. So, notwithstanding the gravity of other things that are going on, and I'll certainly want to put my hairdresser or my barber in a position where they can be safe. But I'm looking forward to getting a haircut. I'm not going to deny that.
I allowed a family member to give myself a haircut, and all I'll say about that is I'm wearing the hat.
One of your kids cut your hair?
Kids will be my next next choice. Speaking of kids, I'm going to go with a basketball hoop with my second pick.
Nice pick.
Play a little hoops in high school, but now it'd be fun to shoot out. I actually do have one out in the front yard now, both a 3-year-old son, 7-year-old daughter. Daughter actually even played in a rec league. So give me a basketball hoop to play with the kids.
Yeah, it's a great call. I wish I had a basketball hoop right now. It's one of the most underrated things. Sometimes I'll stop and think when I was a kid of all the different neighbors who had basketball. We never had a basketball hoop in my driveway, although we did play a lot of hockey in it. But my next door neighbor had a hoop. I was always over there playing, one-on-one, just shooting, something that I'd do and shoot by myself when he wasn't home. Can't go wrong with that. The key is, if you're going to install your own hoop, the key is you just have to make sure it's as close to 10 feet as possible. Every once in a while, you'd shoot hoops at somebody's house and you knew the hoop was kind of at an odd height and kind of screw up your shot for a while. But yeah, that's a great call there. And, I wish I had somewhere to play hoops right now because I don't think there's a hoop anywhere in my neighborhood, not with anybody who I'm familiar with. So great pick in round two. I'm going to take a really simple pick. I'm just going to take the baseball for a very simple reason. Whenever there's a foul ball hit in a baseball game, there's a mad scramble for it. I mean, there are some notorious people out there who go to parks strictly to get as many balls as they can, and they collect them and they shove kids out of the way, whatever. I just think a baseball is a cool thing. It's got a nice weight to it. If you actually get a baseball, it's very collectible. And I've actually never caught or come up with a baseball to game. I've caught a hockey puck at a college hockey game. That's my big moment as a fan. But I've always wanted – I always wondered if they hit a baseball and if I went to a game, and who knows when that might be again, if I got a baseball and there was like a kid in my section, I'd feel the overwhelming peer pressure to give the ball to the kid. I probably would do it. But – I've never gotten a baseball in my life. I just want to have one. So I hope someday they hit a ball to me and there's nobody around for me to give it to and I can just keep it myself. And then I'll give away, I swear, I will give away every other baseball I get. But it's always been a lifelong just kind of silly little goal of mine to catch a foul ball.
All right. I swear I haven't spent much sports watching time in luxury boxes in my life. But when I was a kid, I was in a luxury box and Stan Javier hit a screaming liner that went through the window and hit my dad's friend right in the groin next to me. And the ball rolled right to me. That's my one foul ball I got was sitting in a luxury box, Stan Javier on the Giants. Good call with baseball. You could play catch. So it's, of course, classic. I'm going to go with a ping pong table. This is fun for tournaments, for kids, I think we played once before outside a bar.
Sure.
Also by yourself, you can put the wall up and play it. So I like ping pong, man. It's underrated. So give me table tennis table with my third pick.
That's a great, ping pong is one of those things that I don't think about a lot. And then anytime I'm in a bar and there's a pool table or a ping pong table or a dartboard, I'm always in on those things.
Shuffleboard.
I like any sport where if you have a drink or two, you're convinced you might play a little bit better. I think ping pong, I don't know if that's true or not. Somebody can actually test your motor skills, how they go down if you're imbibing. But I remember we played ping pong. I don't even remember who won. I just remember it was fun.
They have cool things out called I went to a bachelor party and my buddy, we rented out this place called Spin in Austin, Texas. And they just have a big tournament. It's a bunch of tables and seating 1 through 16 and for 3 hours at a ping pong tournament. But not quite Tony Romo playing hide and seek during his bachelor party. But yeah, my buddies, that's what we did. We played a big ping pong tournament.
Oh, you were invited to Tony Romo's bachelor party?
No, I wasn't invited to that one. But he gets a hard time because supposedly he went in the woods and he played hide and seek during his bachelor party. He wasn't exactly partying in Vegas. But anyway, continue. Sorry, we're getting off the rails here.
It's about time we started talking about bachelor parties. What is the odd thing that you can mention on a family show that you did at your bachelor party?
odd thing. What did I do? I went to San Francisco. It was just one night. Nothing jumps out that was anything special. Oh, everyone had to go to the bathroom on the Bay Bridge, and we hit traffic in a limo, and we pulled over on Treasure Island, and 10 guys are peeing on the side of the Bay Bridge. That was kind of funny. Stuck in traffic, guys drinking in a limo, needing to go to the bathroom. So that was the classic scene.
I hope the statute of limitations has passed on that. I would hate to see a bunch of people get brought in because of their truancy on the bridge. But yeah, if I ever do get married and I have a bachelor party, I just want to bond with my friends. I just want to get me to a golf course and let's have a couple of drinks. I'm not looking to do anything crazy. My third round pick, I'm going to take cleats for my pick. And just I just remember how cool it felt when I had a set of baseball cleats. Although, you know, any just the sound when you walk on the pavement with them, it makes that little crunchy sound. And baseball shoes just look cool. And you think about the things that baseball players do between pitches. You know, the pitcher will sometimes rub the dirt out of it, rub the mud between his cleats. They'll try to rub it out with a tongue depressor, or a good way to break tension is you just take your bat, you tap your cleats. I mean, I was always doing that as a kid. Even if I didn't really need to knock anything out of my cleats, it just felt cool to tap your bat against the bottom of your cleat. I just like the way a sound makes the baseball cleats on the pavement, or just the way a set of cool baseball shoes looks. So I'm going to take cleats in the third round.
Okay, for my fourth pick, not a ping pong table, but a pool table. I'm not very good at pool. Had one in my college house. Roommates always beat me, but it's fun. And it feels like it'd be a great game / sport to be really good at. I wish I was really good at pool. So I'd love to own a pool table.
Good pick. You know, I wonder if I'd be any good at pool if I owned a table. I was dumb enough. I shout out to my friend John Greco, who had a pool table. Growing up as a kid, one day I ended up in his basement and we were playing for money, and he, you know, basically schooled me. It took me years to pay off that debt. I think John might have given me a sweetheart deal on it, because that's a rule of thumb, right? I mean, you know, never play poker with somebody's first name is the same as a city. If somebody owns the pool table, don't bet with them. It's a lesson I had to learn when I was 14 or 15 or 16, however old I was. But yeah, pool table is a good pick in the fourth round. I know I already took the baseball, and maybe this is, and I've taken, I think, just about all things tied to baseball, not intentionally, but I'm going to take the baseball glove. If you get a baseball glove as a kid, it becomes like your best friend. You bring it everywhere. You put it under your pillow to try to break it in, and it's got a feel that's different than anybody else's glove. And if you ever have to play in a pickup game without your glove, you just feel like you're not yourself. You know, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything more, I should have taken it earlier than the fourth round, but a baseball glove is about as personal an item, I think, as a kid can have.
You know what? That is a good one. I'm going to go really personal here. This is just a random one, but I'm just going to take the goggles, because I have a swimming pool in my backyard and I love watching my kids learning to swim now. My son went from, super scared of everything to now loving it, wanting to swim all day, every day. It's a good way to get exercise. I am not a runner. I hate it. It hurts my joints. So swimming laps has just been such a better alternative. It's tough to find a good pair. I'm actually still searching for them. If anyone has recommendations, hit me up on Twitter. A good pair of swimming goggles, just because I like how you're getting so personal there. So give me goggles.
Good pick. To round out our draft, I'm going to leave all sorts of things on the board. I thought for sure I was going to take hockey sticks, but I'm going to leave that to the free agents. And maybe somebody can probably draft a bunch of free agents that could beat both of our teams. I'm just going to take the sporting net, and I'm going to include basketball netting. I'm going to include soccer netting. And the reason why is because when I would play pickup sports as a kid, the difference between playing on a facility that had a net and didn't was night and day. I mean, maybe I could even include the hockey net with this. You know, it's so much better than just playing with a couple of snow boulders or something. You actually have something that represents where the goal is. The difference between playing pickup hoops I think we've all played pickup hoops at one point on a goal that didn't have a net.
I love chain nets too.
Right. And soccer, if you're playing pickup soccer, you know, if you shoot on a soccer goal without a net, you can't even always tell if it went in or not. And God knows in basketball, you couldn't always tell. You know, that was a perfect shot. No, it didn't go in. How do you know? Argument. So, a field with a net was always something that I appreciate as a kid. So that will round out our sports equipment draft. Tell us, what did we miss? What in the sporting goods store did we miss out that you would take, that you would draft? Have an idea for a silly draft? Again, you know, I'm all ears, Scott_Pianowski. Dalton, tell everybody what you're up to and how they can keep up with you on social media.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Dalton Del Don. I'm going to come out with an article this year, how to run a fantasy football league. So you can complain.
Oh, great,
you know,
idea.
Some ideas,
like,
you know, half PPR, full PPR, kicker, no, all that stuff. And I have some interesting ideas how I do my home league quirks with team defenses and whatnot. So check that out. And thanks for having me, P&L. Good talking baseball with you. And let's hope that we get to actually watch some soon.
I'll give you my number one with fantasy league, start more players.
Yes.
It leads
to, I say super flex. I say even two tight ends. I'm totally with you. Yes. More strategy, everything. The better person, you know, the better team usually wins, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one outlier performance, good or bad, is less important. And that's good. You know, you shouldn't win your league because you hit on one player. You shouldn't be screwed if the one player, you know, gets hurt or something. When you play multiple players, it just smooths out that variance. Again, I'm on Scott_Pianowski. Shout out to Dalton for hanging with us today. Shout out to Raghu, our producer, doing a great job keeping us on the air and sounding good. Thanks for hanging with us. This was a different podcast today, and it's going to be a different podcast going forward for a lot of different reasons, but I appreciate everybody sticking with us. Keep the ideas coming at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, or hit me or Dalton up personally. And with that in mind, be safe, be good to each other, and we will talk to you soon.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. We want to cover the issues in the macro, global economics, the stock market, and our political climate. We'll also cover the micro stories, maybe the ones you don't hear as much about in the news or the media. We hope you'll listen and be a part of the journey. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.